It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming on YouTube as well at the Team 980. We are scheduled to catch up with Patrick Peterson here, the 2010s all-decade corner, who is now our newest Odyssey Sports NFL insider. But we are having some issues getting a hold of Pat. So once we figure out the disconnect, we'll get connected, and then hopefully we'll have Patrick on the show. If not, everybody's fired. Do I have the power to do that, Anthony?
I don't think it works like that, Craig.
Oh, okay.
I think I've told you this before.
I don't think it works like that.
I can't just say stuff and have it happen?
I mean, no.
I mean, there's certain stuff. Look,
some things.
There's stuff I could say where I get fired.
Yeah.
If it actually were to make the radio airwaves, you would get fired because there's a button that you could hit to make sure it doesn't get there.
Yep.
I'd still probably be in trouble for saying it. Especially now that we go to the stream, there's no dump button on the stream. So, yeah. So in lieu of that, Anthony, I see you staring at the phone. I thought he was calling. No, you're just monitoring in case he does.
Yeah, I'm monitoring it, but I'm gonna pull up my VX producer because that actually lights up. Sometimes the light over here doesn't hit me all the way, so I don't see it. Right away, but yeah, I got my VX up.
See, Anthony's locked in coverage right now.
Yeah.
He's got a lock on and focus for a long time, which transitions us nicely to talking about the Arizona Cardinals. We can start talking about the Cardinals a little bit because we did take command this morning, and so I've watched a little bit of film for them, and obviously Logan and I spent a good long time talking about what we have seen from Arizona. And I think the thing that like stands out to me with Arizona is there is a like huge boomer bust with them when it comes to Kyler. Like, and I think that's in part because the biggest boom and bust plays in football come on blitzes. As we saw on Monday night, you blitz Jaden Daniels, you leave Terry McLaurin on the outside one-on-one, bada bing, bada bam, you hit him in the face, doesn't matter, he gets that ball out, huge play. If you want to go single high and blitz Joe Burrow, like, okay, Benjamin St. Juice, you're in trouble, buddy. Mike Sanders still, you're in trouble, buddy. Jamar Chase getting touchdowns. Like, those plays happen often against pressure because quarterbacks know I've got one-on-one and I have to get the ball out now and there's a risk that I'm willing to take and I can't sit back here and read out the pocket and make sure that I have a guy that's open. I don't necessarily care what the full coverage is. As long as I know this is one-on-one, I'm just going to have to trust my guy to make it. With Kyler, the boom bust, you know, height, potential, all that stuff, like the boom bust nature of things changes a little bit from a dynamic standpoint, because for him, if you get pressure at all, and this is blitz or no blitz, you are risking him running. And that is a bad thing. But if you get no pressure, like he is good enough to dice you from the pocket. And in some ways, there's almost like this perfect rush for Kyler Murray that if the Commanders can pull off, which in some ways I think they're built to, then they can, I think, have a lot of success. And Detroit did this very well. First, Detroit stopped the run at a very, very high rate. And that really wrecked Drew Petzing's plan. Drew Petzing, the offensive coordinator, does a really good job in Arizona. And so his ability to keep them in bad down in distance, Detroit's ability to keep Arizona in bad down and distance, limits the playbook, gets them out of some of their boot actions and play actions and things that they like to do with Kyler to help move the pocket, and puts him in straight drop back where he's not as good. And then they did a really great job of just like collapsing the pocket from outside in. And, you know, we talked so much last year with Sam Howell about the height stuff and does a short quarterback actually have a disadvantage. And you can see at times with Kyler, when you watch him on tape, he can't see. And there's just a reality to being 5'9" in a pocket that is created by 6'4" guards or 6'2" or 6' something guards and a 6'7" tackle or whatever it is that you can't see over. And if you're Jaden Daniels and you're 6'4", like you can see the middle of the field. You can see cleanly to the outside. You can see the short passes where Kyler actually pushes the ball downfield at one of the highest rates in the NFL. I think in part, Anthony, because he can see down there. Like if you got something right in front of you, you can peek up over and like, oh, there's Marvin Harrison down there. Oh, I'm going to throw him the ball. And as a result, I actually looked this up this morning, the old next gen stats of it all. Kyler Murray has thrown past the sticks at the sixth highest rate in 2024. 43% of his passes go past the first down marker. So on first down, that's going to be 10 plus, and then second or third and whatever. Like he, and by the way, a lot of times he is looking for Marvin Harrison Jr., who, according to the NFL's next gen stats, ranks third in targets. He's got 20 of them and is tied for fourth in receptions, third in target, fourth in receptions, and fourth in receiving yards on targets past the sticks. So if you can collapse the pocket and keep Kyler in it, he is going to probably turtle and you're going to get higher sack totals than they've had in any game this year. And if that doesn't happen, well, then he gets out of the pocket. Like you're batting your rush lanes, you get out of the pocket or he gets out of the pocket. And then Anthony, you know what happens then? You're dead.
Do you think this is a game where a guy like Jamin, who has a linebacker background, flourishes? Or just because him, Frankie Louvu, who are some of our other like fast linebackers?
I mean, Dante Fowler in theory, like in the edge position.
Yeah,
you're talking about pure linebacker. I thought about that with Jamin this morning, right? Because we know Furl's out. And so how do you distribute the backup reps behind him? I think Dante Fowler is probably more trustworthy in that he's a veteran, right? When it comes, if Dan Quinn goes to Dante Fowler and is like, look, dude, I need you to execute X, Dante Fowler will do X. He might not do X spectacularly, but he also was probably their best edge. He's been their best edge rusher of the season in terms of juice. But like, he can be trusted that, hey, you can't get too high in your pass rush. For Jamin, it's new. It's not that he's going to forget, but like, he can get washed and be worked by an offensive tackle easier. But because I think the reason I thought about Jamin though is like, if Kyler does escape the pocket, I trust Jamin to chase him down.
Yeah, I'm thinking about using our linebackers or somebody like a Jamin as a spy, just because we know how dangerous Kyler is outside of the pocket kind of thing.
I don't like spies because it takes a player out of both coverage and the rush. So you are almost, it's not even like you're playing with 10. It's almost like you're playing with 9 because you have now taken a player that could either be in the rush or in coverage, and you've put him in no man's land. Now, if he winds up chasing down the quarterback, that can be really helpful and prevent big plays. So it's not like spies are useless. You know, if you've got a third and long situation and you're going to rush 3 and you want to spy because you want to do whatever on the back end and you want to make sure that you have eyes on the quarterback, okay, fine. Or if you want to maybe as part of a pressure package, you're playing man on the back end. So a quarterback, when they see man, often, you know, hey, I'm seeing the backs of jerseys, I'm going to take off and run. It's safe to run because nobody's watching me like they are in zone with their eyes are on the quarterback. As part of a rush package, we maybe take a guy out of the rush. That way, if the quarterback flushes, you don't have that clean escape. I'm fine with a spy that's well used, but often, like, I'm not the biggest spy fan. I just would prefer guys actually, you know, do their jobs with discipline and have a good rush plan and rush together and make sure there aren't silly gaps for Kyler to get out of and rush for 30 yards.
Yeah, I think just as we did, you know, last game where we were sending guys from everywhere and, you know, the Bengals sort of kind of did a good job of, you know, picking everybody up that we were sending.
They did it good enough, and Burrow's amazing and getting the ball out quickly.
Yeah, that too. I was more so just thinking, if we disguise it, you know, the correct way, maybe Jamin gets, you know, lost in the blitz as a spy kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
where he
I mean,
can
I,
engage,
do, I do
disengage,
think, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I do think that can be a thing, right? Is like sometimes, yes, as part of a pressure package, do you have one guy that maybe lays back a little bit, that stays clean, that he's not engaged with an offensive lineman so that if the quarterback takes off, he can go get him? Yeah, that can be possible. And there's different, like, green dogs and things like that where, like, you know, you fake blitz, but then you're in man-to-man on the running back. If the running back stays in because he thought you were blitzing, then you actually do blitz. And sometimes those players get caught behind and wind up kind of getting clean-up sacks as a quarterback gets, you know, flushed. Like, there's all kinds of different situations. Yeah. You know, you can find a million different, what you want to call it, amalgamations of how pressure can work. But I think the biggest thing with Kyler is, like, if he's in the pocket and you have good rush integrity, you are limiting what he can do as a passer, and he is so dangerous on the run. And we didn't even talk about, like, what happens when he scrambles to throw. So many of those down the field throws are that he is I'm trying to think if there's a fourth guy that I want to put in here. But I truly think that, like, if I were to say the top three guys, here's the analogy I used on Take Command this morning. If we're playing quarterback horse, right, we have to come up with some crazy throw. I'm going to roll out to my left and throw the ball between my legs, whatever. Mahomes is the number one pick, right? The number one guy you pick to compete with him is Josh Allen, because Josh Allen has a stupid arm and can throw from off platform, any angle, whatever. And buddy, let me tell you, watching some Bills tape back because they played the Cardinals week one, oh my God, is he fun. I know how well he's playing. Every time I talk about Josh Allen now, I remember that I'm actually rubbing it into Anthony because he said he was overrated, and I'm not doing that on purpose, but then I also feel weird if I don't acknowledge it, so we're just going to keep it moving. But, man, fun to watch. The third guy I would pick in quarterback horse in the NFL, I think, is Kyler. He's that talented off platform. And he can get to spots because he's super fast and he's super quick. And then he can make any throw in the book. He has that baseball background of just, like, I can throw from awkward arm angles. Caleb might be the next guy because he's like that too. But Kyler's, like, in that class of creativity. He's not that class of passer, but he is in that class of creativity.
No, I would agree. He is. I mean, he has the, I guess, all these guys with the baseball backgrounds that can run and sidearm and do all that.
It's something that you learn playing infield.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have good footwork. You have to be able to throw off platform. You have to be able to make stuff happen quickly. You throw from different arm angles. You make it work. And if you can then translate that to football, it can be pretty, pretty potent. Okay, if we catch up with Pat P, we'll talk to Pat P. If not, then we won't. And we'll talk about Thursday Night Football next. We'll never read the comments coming up at 5:30. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 5:30, it'll be Never Read the Comments. Right now, though, I do think, Anthony, give me a thumbs up if we are good. Perhaps, maybe, Anthony, yes, no. Okay, we are good. In just a moment here, we are going to welcome in our newest Odyssey NFL insider, Patrick Peterson, host of the Odyssey Original Podcast, First in Pod. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And with that, we welcome in the 2010s all-decade team member, Patrick Peterson. Pat P, what's up, dude? How are you?
What up, Craig? Happy to be on with you, man. What's happening?
I'm glad to have you. By the way, the fact that we have all of us around the country have to introduce you, and the last thing you're going to hear before we welcome you on all of our shows is "Mayo game day be delicious." What a career you had to earn that, man. What, I just can't. Can you just sometimes look around as you get into this media space and be like, I cannot believe it has come to this.
Man, you know, Craig, I actually had to pinch myself maybe like yesterday when someone was introducing me and all of those, giving me all my accolades and, you know, all of those things. And I was like, wow, I really have accomplished a lot and, you know, pretty much, you know, set out, accomplished the goals that I set out for myself as an individual for my NFL career. So I'm very, very pleased where I ended up throughout my NFL career, Craig.
Yeah, as you should be. And again, thanks to the sponsors. We appreciate the sponsors. I will say, though, Pat, in some of our, like, YouTube comments and people on Twitter and all that kind of stuff, is the Commanders have struggled at corner this year. Your name has come up. So I have to ask, because otherwise the fan base will riot. Are you definitely 100% done as a player, slash if Adam Peters called you and was like, hey, dude, we need some help at corner, do you have any interest in playing? Or are you like, I don't need any more guards running at me on a GT power play?
You know, Craig, I do have aspirations of playing again. You know, so mentally I'm not completely shutting it down. But, you know, I haven't got that phone call yet, you know. So, you know, I'm still working out, still doing the things I need to do to make sure if that phone does ring to a contender that that whenever I do show up that I'm giving them the best that I got. You know what I mean? Because at this stage of my career, I want to compete for a championship. So if Washington is in those conversations and they continue to need help, you know, with corner down the line, yeah, my phone line is open.
All right, I'm sure Adam Peters has your agent's number. Just now I've asked and now we go, and we'll see where they go. Obviously, they are 2-1 this season, so far more towards the contender status than perhaps a lot of people thought going into the year. But, Pat, let's talk about the defense that has struggled. Statistically, there's all kinds of stuff that says they're just really bad. The tape is not good. And I think for them, it probably starts up front. But speaking from a corner's perspective, that marriage of pass rush and coverage, like, how important was it for you during your career? Because, I mean, you had stretches where you were arguably the best corner in football. And for you, you could probably just lock down the side and you're like, go ahead, make my job difficult. It'll be a more interesting day at the office. But for most teams and team defense, that marriage between pass rush and coverage, like, is it possible to say where it starts, or is it really a chicken and egg thing where one has so much effect on the other and it's this vicious cycle if one of them is not playing well?
Man, honestly, it depends on what type of scheme that you're running, because if you go back and look at the early part of my career in Arizona, like, I didn't have no dominant pass rusher. Like, I had Calais Campbell. He was an interior, interior guy. He wasn't, you know, coming off the edge that's able to, you know, force the quarterback to step up. So I really never had a serious pass rusher till about year 7 when we was able to acquire Chandler Jones. So for me, a lot of situations is different. And we was in a man-to-man scheme to where we didn't care what the guys did up front. Yeah, we know it started up there that those guys needed to stop the run. But for the most part, we didn't care what those guys did up front because we knew we was going to be man-to-man. We knew we didn't have any help over the top for the most part. We're just on an island 9 times out of 10. You know, so when I had those assignments, like, I really wasn't worried about, you know, what the guys up front was doing. If they got to the pass rusher, yeah, you know, so be it. But as I got older, you know, as, you know, the athletic ability of the, not the athletic ability, but the speed started to dwindle a little bit. Now you're able to, you know, rely on the pass rusher because you're not able to cover as long. So that's why I said it depends on what scheme that you're in, or, you know, whatever scheme that the defense is running, to be able to lean on a certain position group. Because, like, you know, in Seattle, you know, back in the Legion of Boom days, those guys, they was a Legion of Boom, but they leaned on their front four to apply pressure to force the quarterbacks to force turnovers. When I was in Arizona, it was all about the back end. It was all about man-to-man, zero coverage. We're going to apply the pressure and put the pressure on our back end to cover us up. So it just all depends on what type of scheme that the defense is running.
Yeah, it definitely feels like here in Washington, they are definitely trying to lean on that front, and it's not going great so far. But there was another part of that answer, Pat, that I think is interesting, because you talk about, hey, the one thing we did rely upon them is to stop the run. And I look at this matchup against mm-hmm. Arizona and the way that Arizona, one, could just straight up run the heck out of the football, and two, all the play mm-hmm. action and boot and waggle stuff they do with Kyler that is off of their ability to run it, because he's not necessarily a guy that at 5'9" is just going to sit in the pocket and pick you apart. But when he can get out and use his mobility, he's as deadly as any quarterback there is in the league. So how does that affect the back end if a play caller, in this case Arizona's Drew Petzing, has to become one-dimensional and they can't really run the football effectively?
So, in my opinion, that's what you want to kind of make Arizona be, is like a one-dimensional football team. And, yeah, they have been putting up some big numbers as far as the rushing attempts. But you want to kind of make them one-dimensional, whatever the case may be. So whatever they do well going into the game, if they run the ball well, if they pass the ball well, you want to take that out of the game. We want to try to make them beat us. I'm speaking as a defensive coordinator.
Right.
You want to try to make them beat us with their left hand. So if they run the ball well, yeah, we want to stack the box. And if we feel like Kyler Murray is not a capable quarterback that's willing enough to beat us with his arm, we're going to stack the box and force them to beat us with their left hand. If yet, we know, we understand Kyler Murray will make those, extra time, create extra time for those pass plays. But we're going to be able to live with that because now we're going into practice understanding that we are, as a back end, we are going to have extra, we are going to have to cover guys extra on the back end. So now it's not going to be 4 seconds. We got to think more of a 6 to 8 second rule. So now we got to be in coverage a little bit longer. So now if that's their case, we can't allow backyard football to beat us. We're going to stop the run, and it can't allow backyard football to beat us and see if they can beat us with their left hand. That's me as a defensive coordinator going into this ball game.
Always easier said than done, but that seems like it'll be Joe Witt's plan on Sunday. Patrick Peterson, our Odyssey Sports NFL insider with us. Again, insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. The other big storyline in the defensive secondary for Washington this weekend is hopefully the return of Emmanuel Forbes, the former first round pick who obviously has had his ups and downs to say the least, Pat. When you either yourself had any issues during your career with up and down play, or you had a teammate, especially a younger teammate who had a tough time and maybe need to regain confidence, how do you try to go about that as a defensive back? And have you watched Emmanuel specifically? And if you have any notes on him, I'd be definitely curious what you think of him.
Yeah, I think Emmanuel is going to be a good player in this league. It all comes down to just confidence and being able to have that experience. That's what I believe it comes down to, because a lot of young guys who come into the league, yeah, they had a lot of experience in on the college level, but when they get into the league, these are grown men. So, and there's no holds bars about your performance as far as what's being discussed upstairs, in the meeting rooms, in the locker room, in the showers, or whatever the case may be. So it's a whole different perspective that these guys are coming in. But for me, when I went through those stretches of games or had a moment throughout the season, all you have to do is just rely on the ability that the God-given ability that got you there. You know what I mean? So you know the game. At some point, it may be something that may be distracting you off the field. Something may be holding you back, or you may not feel happy with something elsewhere. You got to come to a realization that, this is my livelihood. So whatever's going on outside of this locker room, it don't matter, because I have to put my best foot forward, each and every day when I step into this building in order to get out the fulfillment of what I want out of my career. And that's been the thing I've seen, throughout my 13 years and out throughout the year, throughout my 13 year career, that guys don't understand how to separate the two lives, because there are two lives. Yeah, we are NFL players, but when we leave that building, we're a normal human being. So we got to be able to understand how to juggle both of the lives that we're into right now. So I believe that's the biggest thing of, younger guys that's coming into the league right now. They're having trouble on understanding how to handle both bubbles. There's a real life bubble, and then there's an NFL bubble. You know what I mean? When you get both of those bubbles into one, they don't correlate, especially if you don't have one or the other under control.
No, that makes sense. And I think the older I get covering this league and doing the job that I do, the more I appreciate how young these guys are when they get into the league. And it's a lot to handle. And that's why, organizations are spending millions of dollars at this point in support for players in a way that they never did in the past, which is great. And obviously Washington's building up that infrastructure. I got two more questions for you, Pat. I definitely want to let you talk about your fellow LSU Tiger and Jaden Daniels before we go. But one more defensive backs question for you that I've always kind of had a theory, and now I get to ask one of the best to do it in the last 25 years of the league. So I'm going to ask you this. How dependent is that position on coaching and scheme? So I think about Emmanuel as a guy who played so much man-to-man and single high type of coverages in college and really excelled at that. And now is being asked to play different techniques, a lot more cover two, and has had time struggles adjusting to that in the league. So how dependent is the cornerback position specifically on coaching at the NFL level?
I won't necessarily say it's very dependent. in the National Football League. But guys, like you just said, guys who's coming out of the college level, there's guys who was man-to-man guys like myself. There are guys who are like Richard Sherman, who played with more vision, so who understand more spacing in defensive coverages versus a guy like me. I'm playing with my back towards the quarterback. I'm literally following the receiver around the yard. Wherever he goes, I'm going. So when you get into the NFL, there's multiple schemes. There's, you know, cover twos, a cover three scheme, cover four schemes, there's man-to-man schemes, there's fire zone schemes. So therefore, you have to be able to adapt to whatever, you know, whatever the player who you're drafting, what they do well. So, like for me, when I came into the game, like my eyes was like really, really bad because I was used to just having my eyes on a specific guy. So then when I was asked to play cover three or cover four, I wasn't as comfortable as that because now my eyes are wandering because I'm so used to watching one guy.
Right.
So that's what defensive coordinators going to have to do, you know, a good job of when they're scouting these guys out of college. You know, what scheme are they coming from? Are they going to be able to fit in our scheme? Because I believe that's another thing. That's why you don't see a lot of guys that last as well in the league as well, because, you know, you might have a guy coming from a zone concept and he's getting drafted to a man-to-man scheme. That don't correlate. So therefore, right, you know, there's a slight chance that this guy's going to be successful. So I just think, you know, they just have to do a better job of making sure that guys who they really, really want can really meet their standards of, you know, what they're looking for out of their scheme.
Yeah, and I also think of guys like Nnamdi Asamoah, who were incredible in one scheme, signed free agent-wise with another team, and then they're out of the league, right, a couple years later. And it's like, yeah, well, if he was good there and not good there, it's that, you know, that change in scheme. And that's kind of the guy or one of the guys I was thinking about with that theory. So that's definitely great insight to hear and kind of how that plays out. All right, last but not least, your fellow LSU Tiger, Jaden Daniels, just had one of the greatest performances we've seen in a long time by a rookie in the league period, one of the best primetime performances we've seen by a quarterback. What have you seen from Jaden through three games?
Man, past the three games, man, when he was back at LSU, you know, the last two seasons, you know, I always felt that he was going to be a guy whenever he had his opportunity, he was going to be, you know, special because you saw the growth year after year and the confidence grow year after year. And now to see, you know, what it has become, I'm not surprised at all. You know, that game he had last week against the Cincinnati Bengals was just remarkable on all facets of the game, far as managing the game, far as clutch moments in the game, far as impact player in the game. Like, he answered all of those questions, you know, in that one ball game, and he's been answering a lot of questions throughout the first 3 weeks of this season. So it's remarkable to see a fellow, you know, LSU Tiger shine in the NFL and continue to make LSU proud, because, you know, that's one of the positions that we always been lacking, was the quarterback position. So him and Joe Burrow are doing a great job of representing the LSU Tigers at that position for sure.
Yeah, everyone is just hurting for you. You guys, a DBU, wide receiver U. Oh, no, they have quarterbacks now. Oh, God. Cry for LSU. Pat, this was awesome, dude. I really appreciate the time very much. I mean, I hope you get that shot to go compete for a ring. It'd be a hell of a cherry on top for what was an incredible career. But for as long as you're on our team here at Odyssey, we'd love to have you back on the show sooner rather than later. Appreciate the time, man.
All right, Craig. Thanks for having me. I hope to talk to you guys soon.
Absolutely. That's Patrick Peterson, everybody, our Odyssey NFL insider and host of the Odyssey Original Podcast. First in Pod, Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. When we get back, never read the comments. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming on YouTube at the Team 980. And if you just missed Patrick Peterson, you missed one heck of an interview. You should definitely check that out in the podcast feed, the Rewind app, or that thing's going on YouTube ASAP lickety split. So we'll get the video up here in just a moment. However, right now, speaking of YouTube, it is time for Never Read the Comments.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, here we go. You leave your comments at the Team 980, at Craig Hoffman. We read them. We scan through the hundreds, if not thousands, that we get. And we pick out the ones that we want to respond to here on the radio. We always start with a little amuse-bouche, if you will. Get us in the right mood, Anthony. So here's our comment sampler appetizer today. Carlos Allen, 4616, says, so a three, and this was in response to my first and 10, which, by the way, the number one thing I said about Jaden Daniels is a star is born. So a three-game rookie quarterback gets nitpicked after 90% completion percentage, no turnovers, and a game-sealing TD pass? Craig, you need to quit it. I honestly don't remember what I nitpicked, Anthony, if I picked nits. I think I said, like, here's where he wasn't literally perfect, which is an unreasonable standard. I guess if that's nitpicking, I'm guilty. But the reason I picked this out, Anthony, because I think it's so funny that literally the next comment on the same video, I believe, was Marco Antonellino said, I have seen a lot of videos this week of what we did well, but I can't seem to find the critical ones of what we can do better.
I am in tears.
Those were, I don't know if they're actually on the same videos because I was just scrolling through the comments and they're chronological, but the two comments left back to back somewhere on my YouTube page were me nitpicking Jaden Daniels' Monday night performance and then someone complaining that they haven't found the videos where we were critical of the team.
Do you think that's sarcasm by chance?
Maybe. That would actually make a lot more sense. Although, like, we obviously talked about the defense and yikes, bro. Yeah. So there's you know. So I would say, Marco Antonellino, you should go check out the video where a lot of our comments today come from, where we talk about how the Commanders' defense is dead ass last in DVOA and the fifth worst in DVOA defensively since the stat was originated in 1979. Speaking of, GoCaps DMV said on that video, someone has to be last. Wait, we're last. Yep, Rome was not built in a day. And I appreciate the humor, because look, there's going to be some rough spots this year. There is going to be some times where things don't go great. And that's not just for the defense, where they've already had three games worth, if we're being honest. That's going to go for Jaden Daniels because he's a rookie. He's not going to be this good the entire year. That's impossible. Again, he probably, just based off sheer math, set his career high in completion percentage for his career on Monday night. He's not going to do that again ever, and that's fine. He has completed 91% of his passes. So we're going to have a chuckle and a laugh for our sanity at some point this year. With that said, it is worth pointing out that we are early in this rebuild, even if it's going well, and they're sitting at 2-1. So there is that. As for where the blame goes for the defense not playing up to par, Hillam Adventures 4060 says, this also sits at the feet of the previous regime with all the terrible first round picks, bad defensive roster building decisions, then leaving the defensive cupboard bare. Seven new defensive starters this season. Yeah. And as I've said before, often during this segment, in fact, but I've said many times, like, the best players in the league aren't available through free agency. There's a reason that Adam Peters wants to build through the draft, and that is because that is where you get your stars. Rarely do star players, maybe one or two a year, who just, they got, like T. Higgins, right? T. Higgins is a bona fide star receiver who's probably next year going to be a free agent because Cincinnati can't afford to keep him. It would be reckless roster building because they're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase, or maybe they won't, and maybe Ja'Marr Chase winds up actually hitting the market, in which case then you would have a true superstar to the caliber that you typically do not have hit the market. Because the absolute blue chippers in this league, and I would argue that T. Higgins isn't even that. T. Higgins is a red chip, not a blue chip. Top 25, top 30, definitely. Top 5 at his position? No. No, he's great, but he's not that good. Ja'Marr Chase, he's that good. And so those types of players don't hit free agency. They occasionally get traded. Often if there's mitigating circumstances of some kind, see Trent Williams, unfortunately, as if I had to remind everybody. But by and large, your best players, the best players, they spend their primes with the teams that drafted them. And it's because they get acquired through the draft. And so building a team on the fly is really, really, really hard. Because even if they drafted, let's say Mike Sainer still turns into a multiple-time all-pro cornerback, becomes the best nickel in the league, he's still a rookie right now. And it's going to take time for him to develop into that. So I do think mostly it's just the reality of the process. Couple of funny ones here is we have a short edition of Never Read the Comments today. Anthony, have you went back and watched the fourth down completion to Luke McCaffrey from the game the other night?
Talking about where he kept going, like he looked in the first window, wasn't there, and kept going?
Yeah, which, like, that's the analysis, right? Oh, what a job by Luke, what a job by Jaden to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
I need to send you the end zone angle of that, because on Take Command, Logan and I were talking about that play, and he goes, I don't think that Luke McCaffrey was the intended target.
Who was?
I went back and watched it. We literally stopped the podcast.
Now I want to watch it.
We stopped the podcast. You need to watch the end zone angle. So if you don't have, you have your NFL Pro, right?
Yes.
Just go search an NFL Pro on, like, by player, search Jaden Daniels, and then go to play situation and hit fourth down. That's going to be the easiest way to find it. And then watch the end zone angle, because Jaden does read multiple guys. He comes back across and Noah Brown hooks up 5-yard curl, sits down right where Jaden is looking. Like, you watch his helmet stripe. He looks at Noah Brown. He throws, and Luke McCaffrey comes and intercepts the ball and then runs another 25 yards. And Sisodia21 says, Craig, I think Logan is right that Jaden was actually throwing to Noah on the fourth down play, as he seemed to allude to that when he was asked in the postgame presser. I thought he was confused about the play he was asked about, but now makes sense. Thanks for the great content, as always, guys.
Oh, wow. I mean, either way, we have the completion, but...
Do we have the Jaden postgame sound by any chance?
We'd have to.
I should have prepped you on that. That's my bad.
I think possibly. Let me
look in it for that. Him talking about that fourth down completion, because I swear I might have this one. I might have to tweet out. I might have to go pull and tweet this one out. But he definitely. It's good process. It would have been a completion. I think Noah Brown's open. I think he would have caught it. Ball looked like it was going to be placed well. It's going to hit him right between the 8 and the 5. And then Luke McCaffrey was like, it's going to hit me between the 1 and the 2, and he just kept on running.
Okay.
So there's one to go watch when you get home, if you're not home as you consume this right now. Then we got some caller-on-caller crime. We'll see if we can find the sound later, Anthony. Caller-on-caller crime. Our old guy, Marvin, remember he called during draft season or after draft season talking about how Brandon Coleman's not that good. They should have definitely taken Kingsley Suamatia. Who went to the Chiefs. TDZCX50T says, Marvin's punching air right now. Next time he calls in, ask him why his boy Suamatia got benched when he squared up against Trey Hendrickson versus Coleman, who had him on his butt multiple times.
Dang, Suamatia got benched?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he probably would have been the backup anyway, but the starter was hurt, and so he kind of got benched, but it's more of like they were willing to take a little bit more risk when they probably would have wanted to give their guy in Kansas City another week.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. Coleman's probably played better than Suamatia so far. He's a young player who is going to need some development. Still might be good. Like, I am not going to judge people's entire careers based off 3 games. I am going to laugh at commenter on caller violence because I think it's funny. Which brings us to one of our most famed calls of the offseason from Shane from Oxon Hill. If you need a refresher, this was Shane from Oxon Hill.
The guy had 11 touchdowns over the past 2 years. Terry McLaurin has 9. Olamide Zaccheaus had 10 catches last year. Diami Brown had 100 yards last year. Are we a better team without Jahan Dotson? No, we're not. So stop all the baloney, man. We traded Montez Sweat, and now we have Cleveland Furl. He had 2 sacks. and Dante Fowler, who has two sacks. We have Austin Eckler, who is 30 years old. Like, come on, bro. Kendall Fuller is in Miami. Curtis Samuel is in Buffalo. Cam Curl is in with the Rams. And we have a guy, Adam Peters, who's bringing in bums. And everybody's like, oh, just because we're bringing in new faces mean we're better.
That was Shane from Oxon Hill. As you might imagine, with Jahan Dotson not exactly killing it in Philly, and some of the players that he mentioned, like Austin Eckler, unfortunately out this week, but absolutely crushing it so far in D.C., that TikTok has caught the algorithm again, Anthony. It is suddenly coming across people's screens. And so Dark Side Reviews 4455, or 4452 says, this is not aging well. Eric Huffman 98. Aged like milk. Dotson sucks. That's harsh. B. Moore Akuma. Eating crow yet? And then you got this one, which I actually thought was the most funny. Kevin Gratonic 8812. I bet he has changed his opinion after Monday night against Cincy. Actually, I hated getting rid of Montez Sweat. Some things are going to take longer to age poorly than others. I think when they take the money they would have paid Montez Sweat and pay someone else, then Kevin will be on board with that one. But man, I was like, why is this? Oh,
yeah.
That's why it's getting so many comments.
Eckler. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I want to check something real quick.
Are you about to see how many sacks Montez Sweat has?
No, okay. I need, it was Zacchaeus, Diami Brown, and Austin Eckler. Those were the players that he was complaining about. So far this year, Alameda Zacchaeus, we need stats. Austin Eckler, we need stats. Jahan Dotson has been targeted 5 times. He has 3 catches for 14 yards. So 3 catches, 14 yards for Jahan Dotson in 3 games. Alameda Zacchaeus has 4 catches for 29 yards. Diami Brown has 4 catches for 33 yards. Austin Eckler has 5 carries for 45 yards and a touchdown. And he also has, I need receiving, please. That's 5, 9, and I can't even do, he's got well over 100 yards receiving. So literally every player that he named in that call has more production individually than Jahan Dotson. Oh, I'm sorry. Jahan Dotson.
Wow. Jahan.
Good job, Shane. Good job. And that's Never Read the Comments. And a reminder why we never read the comments. When we get back, Cliff Kingsbury, Joe Witt Jr. took to the podium out in Arizona. We'll let you hear what they had to say in our Pick 6 at 6.